Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, a travel expert recommends the best smartphone apps to take with you while you're away from home to help you stay healthy. Plus, some of our guests reveal the one thing they do for their own health and well-being.
But first, you know how some people say they can predict the weather by the ache in their bones? Seasonal allergy sufferers have their own set of symptoms that herald the warm weather.
I get terrible coughs, my eyes get watery and itchy, and I get terrible headaches.
Every day I wake up feeling like my eyes are going to pop out of their sockets.
The stuffy nose.
Physically, I feel like I've been sick since, you know, early April.
Typically, I will get headaches or runny nose.
I can't drive in the car with the windows down or I won't be able to see. My eyes will swell shut.
It's awful.
I can't go in the grass.
You know, people like this good weather. I hate it. I hate it so much.
I have a tissue box with me constantly.
I don't get it.
This year has been extra bad with the allergies.
I hate them so much.
It's just really annoying.
It's killing me.
You know, I'll wake up with a headache and that kind of puts me in a not great mood for the rest of the day.
It's awful.
It's awful.
Millions of Americans cope with this every spring, summer, and fall. Does it have to be this way?
We'll find out from our next guest, an expert on allergy, asthma, immunology, and pulmonary disease. Dr. Juan Sotomayor is assistant professor in pediatrics and allergy at University Hospital and St. Joseph's Hospital, and specializes in pulmonary and asthma diseases in his private practice in Syracuse. Welcome, Dr. Sotomayor. Thanks for joining us.
How are you?
The warmer months can be a really miserable time for allergy sufferers. Can you explain what physically happens when someone has an allergic reaction to pollen or another allergen?
So these are microscopic particles that are not visual to the naked eye, and they have to be small enough and aerodynamically suited to penetrate the mucous membranes of your body, meaning typically the eyes, which are exposed first, and the nose. And then for more significant cases, they have to go down and penetrate into the airways. Now, you could also inhale them through the mouth, so you could get systemic reactions as well. What happens is these microscopic particles come in contact with the factories that are called mast cells, M-A-S-T. Mast cells contain histamine. Histamine is a preformed granular mediator that is already formed in your body, already in these mast cells, ready to go. Now, when you have an allergy, there's this antibody called an IgE antibody that sits on top of these mast cells, and they also circulate. When they get cross-linked at the surface, so after these pollens get cross-linked with these IgE antibodies, you get a rapid release of histamine. And within seconds to minutes, you get a rapid response of all the chemical reactions that occur with histamine, which you describe, which is runny nose, sneezing, stuffiness, congestion. You get increased permeability of your blood vessels, and you get rapid stuffiness in your nose. Your eyes start to water, and all these effects are from histamine. Now, if that were the case and the histamine was the only chemical that was released, we'd be fine and take care of the allergy, and we have no problem and walk our merry way. But that doesn't happen. These mast cells are also factories for other chemicals. These other chemicals get produced, and within minutes to hours, you get another onset, another hit of chemicals, leukotrienes, prostaglandins, many other chemicals. These chemicals then continue the allergic reaction and sometimes make it worse because the swelling gets worse. I hope I answered the question correctly for you guys.
Very good. Very thorough. Much more than I've ever gotten from a 30-second commercial promoting some asthma relief product. Now, in terms of all that you've described, is this sort of like a yes-no on-off switch, or are there degrees of reactions to histamines?
That's an excellent question, because everyone, to a certain extent, will react to a certain level of pollen, molds, or dust. So even if you're not allergic, you can overwhelm your body, get those mast cells to release. So the level of IgE antibodies is the people who have this predisposition to allergies are going to be more sensitive to lower amounts. Now, that sensitivity can vary, and the reactions can vary. So, yes, there are levels of reaction ranging from somebody just having a little bit of sneezing, mild itching, everything can be mild, to very severe. And everyone's different. And that's genetically determined. It's also how much your own body has become resistant, because eventually you become resistant to these things as you get older. Allergy is one of the more interesting disease processes in that as you get older, you actually get better. You probably auto-immunize yourself as you get older.
I have two questions to ask you about that. Number one, who are the people that do have those really more severe allergy reactions? Is there a hereditary factor? And I want to follow that up with what about getting allergies as you get older when you've never had them before?
So typically allergies, the funny thing, allergies are genetically determined. It's not a strict Mendelian genetics, meaning you can't predict it within a family, but it is considered a familial illness, meaning that it's a multi-gene locus. Second of all, there are predispositions. So, for instance, males get affected slightly more when they're younger, and as one gets older, females get slightly more affected. So there is probably a hormonal influence, although the hormonal influence is not well defined yet. And your next question was?
Well, there are some people, like myself, who never had allergies.
Right.
And then and so, all of a sudden, I keep thinking, gee, I don't have allergies.
So
but
one of the great sort of things I hear in my practice is I'm not born with them. Why am I getting them now? Well, allergies don't peak to your 20s, 30s, and 40s, and then slowly towards your 40s and 50s start to decline. So many people, especially women, will get them as they get older, and that's very typical.
And then will they have a shorter lifespan? Like, will they eventually go away or you're stuck?
No, you know, that's another good question. You can't predict the length of when someone's going to have allergy symptoms. So I tell people it could be 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20. There is no prediction within each individual.
Obviously, some people get summer colds and then they linger, but it's probably self-evident when it becomes an allergy and that it lasts throughout the season. And I know there are different reactions in terms of spring pollens from trees and then summer there's ragweed. But how would someone ascertain whether or not, oh, I'm forming a new allergy, I seem to have these sniffles or these watery eyes all season long?
Yeah, so here are two things I'm going to answer. First of all, the earliest pollens to start would be March and April would be the tree pollen, and then as you get into May or June, it's grass pollen. You get a little respite right in the middle of the summer, and in fact, you will see in the middle of the summer, there's a little bit of dust. Obviously, it's always year-long, and molds are probably the biggest in the middle of the summer. But then mid-August, right around August 15, it's ragweed and weed. So those are your typical pollen times. Dust mite is considered a perennial allergen. Molds are mostly perennial, but in the middle of the winter, you don't see a lot of mold activity, so the very cold air is actually good for mold. And the second thing is, how do you differentiate an allergy from a simple cold or virus or sinus infection? Even in the best of hands, you always can't, but if you have a typical time period, number one. Number two, if you have a fever, it's very unlikely you would have an allergy. Although allergies were called rose fever in the spring, and hay fever in the fall, you had symptoms like a fever, but you really don't get febrile illnesses, even though those names are used commonly. So you don't have fever. Now, typically, if other family members are sick or you have muscle aches, signs of flu, it wouldn't be an allergy. Now, you can have overlap of all those symptoms except fever. You really don't get a fever with allergies. And so the next step would be that you would have to consider some form of testing, which in our hands would either be scratch testing or what's called prick testing, intradermal testing, and occasionally blood tests are getting better as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're joined by Dr. Juan Sotomayor. We're talking about seasonal allergies. And you just started talking about getting tested for allergies. I was going to ask your advice. If somebody finds that they're suffering, it's not too bad, do you recommend they come and see a medical professional? Or might they try an over-the-counter medication? And if that seems to do the trick, then they're fine maintaining. Maintaining that?
I get that question a lot from health professionals. When do you refer and when don't you? And the simple answer to that is if your quality of life is not severely affected day to day, then trying over-the-counter medication, especially the ones that used to be prescription and are now fairly safe and non-sedating, are definitely where you would start. If your quality of life is being affected, you're getting poor sleep, you're irritable, you're missing days at work, you're starting getting other, what we call paraallergic phenomena, chronic sinus, you're getting asthma, you have eczema, you start to get food allergies, then I think referring. So for a simple allergy sufferer who really feels that their day-to-day function's a little annoying but not affected, certainly try the over-the-counter. I think if you get past that and then you're getting the secondary allergic problems, you should see a health professional.
And once someone comes in, would you just briefly describe how that allergy testing works?
So we have purified allergens. They're sterile, purified. They're placed on the skin by what we call a pricker, and we see if they get swelling. That signifies an immediate release of histamine from your skin to a particular allergen. Those are the surface mast cells. Even though we are testing at a remote site, meaning in your skin or sometimes in the blood, you can still ascertain what's going on in your nose and your eyes. And that's how we would start our testing.
And then based on the result, you would prescribe a certain medication? Is one better than another?
In our practice, we typically start with medication. Occasionally, if someone's very severe or they've already tried medications from their doctors and it doesn't work, we would go to immunotherapy or allergy shots.
Okay, about those allergy shots, when are they warranted and how do they work?
So allergy shots are how they work. Let's go backwards. It's a great mystery still. There are a lot of theories, scientific theories, but generally it's felt that there are protective antibodies that you build up in your blood. That's one mechanism. There's another mechanism called T regulatory cells where it suppresses the making of the allergy cells to begin with. So it's complex how immunotherapy works. But the actual mechanism is that for some reason, when you give small amounts of a purified allergen, either in the blood, now we could also do it sublingual or on the tongue, that's being investigated, but not completely ready yet. We can, by giving them small amounts and building it up in a defined manner, almost what I call a stepladder, you end up building an autoimmunity to what you're allergic to. Now, that autoimmunity is probably just accelerated what your own body would have done over time. This sort of accelerates that process. In our practice, we do allergy shots. We do it weekly for probably 6 to 12 months, somewhere in that neighborhood, depending on how many allergies and how severe you are. And then you go to an every two-week schedule for a year, then every 3 weeks, and then once a month for a total of somewhere between 4 and 7 years. Everybody's a little different. Now, why are they different? It's their response, and generally the response is probably about, I call it the 80-80 club. 80% of people respond well to allergy shots, and you can expect an 80% improvement. And the difference between allergy shots and medications, by the way, allergy shots actually improves your allergies at the immune level, whereas medication is palliative. It just masks the symptoms, whereas allergy shots actually gives you the promise of trying to control your system by trying to get to the problem originally. And I tell people that it's probably the most holistic way of therapy when you actually think about it, because your body's already getting exposed to the stuff every day. We're just doing it in a manner that just slowly builds it up.
I think many of us are aware of allergy shots for someone who's, let's say, allergic to animals, cats, dogs, or perhaps dust mites. But are there allergy shots for seasonal allergies?
For pollen, sure. And that's what it works for the best. Absolutely. For grass, pollen, tree pollen, weeds, absolutely.
What are some non-medical things people can do to prevent or lessen their allergy symptoms, just everyday things?
So that's, environmental controls for perennials, meaning dust mite, are well, and I'm going to give you the simple overview for dust mite control, fabric. Fabric is your enemy. So wherever there's carpeting, bedding, mattresses, box springs, upholstered curtain, upholstered furniture, dust mites live in that. If you can reduce the fabric, you can reduce your dust mite control. The second thing is high altitude. So if you live in Denver, that works. The third thing is controlling humidity. Dust mites breed in high humidity, above 45%. So you want to keep humidity somewhere between 30 and 45%. So those are the things you can do to try to control dust mite. In terms of pollen, it's ubiquitous. You close your windows. Central air conditioning is good. You just don't want to get exposed as much. A lot of pollens have a little bit of a daily variation. For instance, grass and tree pollen pollinate in the morning, and ragweed is more, I believe, in the afternoon. So what happens is you can actually sometimes don't go out when it's really heavy pollen time. You might want to go out in the late evening as opposed to the morning, those kind of things.
In terms of taking care of managing the symptoms of your allergies, is there a problem if you just, you live with it? In other words, if allergies go untreated, is there any damage that we can do to ourselves?
There really isn't damage in the sense that you're going to do damage to yourself. It's really those secondary complications that we worry about, the asthma, the chronic sinus disease. So it's those secondary allergic phenomena the term we use in medicine is comorbid conditions. When you suffer comorbid conditions, the real effect of allergies is on your quality of life. And that's really the problem I see. I always use this sort of analogy. Lung care was a big part of my early training. And we used to see a lot of smokers and see a lot of people with COPD. And there's been many studies that have looked at the quality of life of smokers and their effects versus allergic rhinitis. And people who have chronic stuffy nose invariably have the lowest quality of life. But people with COPD and breathing problems never feel that bad. They continue to smoke. They continue to do the things that that destroy their lung. Yet the people with chronic stuffy nose are infinitely more concerned, much more affected with their quality of life. So chronic stuffy nose, chronic runniness, the secondary effects can be phenomenal and really affect them on a day-to-day basis.
Before we go, Dr. Sotomayor, you do have a very distinctive last name, and you have a famous sister who happens to be, you can tell us.
She is the Supreme Court Justice, Sonia Sotomayor.
And how has that affected your practice? I know in your waiting room there's a lovely signed picture. Let's put it this way. Most allergists do not have a picture of the Supreme Court justices with signatures. So other than that, I mean, you are obviously proud of the connection.
I'm very proud of her. And I honestly don't know how it's affected my practice.
You must have patients who come in and want to bend your ear or say something.
I do have a few here and there, but generally I don't know if it's positively. I'm sure it's somewhat positively affected my practice. You know, I've had some negative comments in the as well, you know, attributing her beliefs or her judgments to our practice. And I just say I'm the brother. I don't deal in politics or in law. I deal in medicine. So, you know, it's just like anyone else's sibling. We have different viewpoints. She has different career. And I don't really cross with her career. Her career is her life, and she deals with it in one way, and I deal with my medical career in another way. So, you know, I think overall it's been very positive for me, but there's always this little, you know, there's always a little bit of negativity associated with things, and you never change people's minds. So I think overall it's been beneficial, but is it really increased my practice or increased my referrals? I don't think it's done that, to be honest with you.
Well, we have benefited from your expertise on seasonal allergies. Thank you very much, Dr. Sotomayor.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Dr. Juan Sotomayor is an allergist who specializes in pulmonary and asthma diseases. For more information on Dr. Sotomayor and seasonal allergies, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show.
Coming up, experts reveal the one thing they do for their continued health and well-being. Plus, the best smartphone apps to keep you healthy while traveling. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.